I am the way and the truth and the life.
Hallelujah.
He that believeth in me shall inherit the earth.
And the house of lords.
O God. Grant that the deliberations of these thy ministers shall be wise and just and new and modern.
Amen.
The people's cabinet is now in session. Now, can we begin with this rather unfortunate business of Her Majesty's overseas visit? Foreign Secretary, how did the Queen manage to get lost? Foreign Secretary.
In the End, by Mark Tavener. Starring Michael Williams, Barry Foster, and Jonathan Coy.
And the headlines again. The Prime Minister has expressed full confidence in the Foreign Secretary. This follows widespread criticism of a recent royal tour of European capitals, during which the Queen was put on the wrong train and went to Earl's Court. The Chancellor of the Exchequer has claimed that the British economy has had an excellent year. And the England football captain, Andy Stanley, has denied being a drug dealer. BBC Radio 4 News.
Thanks, everybody.
Andy Stanley. What a silly boy.
Morning, George.
Andrew,
keep going that Stanley story.
OK.
Shit, does this make sense to you? Andy Stanley plays 60 or 70 football matches a year. He has to be in peak condition from August till May. And this guy does drugs?
The story was more about him dealing in them.
Ah, the classic tabloid sting, eh? Entrapment, as they call it.
Yep, that's why we have to be so careful about how we report it. He might be going to sue them for libel.
I wish we could go in for some media entrapment. Would liven up BBC journalism no end.
A nice, juicy crime story by tonight would liven it up a bit. Even, if we're really lucky, a crime story from our crime correspondent.
Oh, sorry, did I miss a piece of gratuitous sarcasm?
No, you missed a gratuitous request from your gratuitous boss.
Well, I tell you what. Maria. Suppose I go to Stanley's news conference. Well, come on, Richard. Drug dealing's a crime.
Now.
There ought to be a crime story, isn't it?
Sports department are handling it.
In that case, I definitely better be there. Just so there's a journalist present.
All right. Well, mind you come back with something.
Thank you, Foreign Secretary. No, I haven't quite finished yet, actually. I want us to ask ourselves where we're going. What have we really delivered to the British people?
Stable growth, low interest rates, falling unemployment.
Yes, but is that really enough?
It's enough to give us a very healthy lead in the polls, Kenny.
Yes, but, you know, opinion polls. Look, let me put it this way. We've been here 2.5 years, and sometimes I look at the British people and I think, winning £1 million, lying on a beach and ogling naked bodies, is that the limit of their moral horizon?
Yes, it is.
Well, what about vision? What about spiritual appetite?
Prime Minister, if I may answer that, there are, in my view, two things any sensible government should avoid. The first is a moral crusade. The second is telling the British people what we really think of them. Very ill-advised. Yeah,
but look at the newspapers. A young chap, hero to millions of our young people, and all we can do in this country is drag him down, make him a laughingstock. Is that the kind of people we are?
Yes, it is. And no government can do anything about it.
Yeah. I wonder. Well, thank you. That was most useful. Anyway, I trust you're all coming to the Cabinet carol singing?
Carol singing?
Next Tuesday.
Economic summit, unfortunately, PM.
Oh, well, come along afterwards.
In Guadeloupe.
NATO meeting. Absolutely unavoidable.
Constituency engagement. If only I could get out of it.
Oh, well, never mind. Dance, dance, wherever you may be. I am the lord of the dance, said he.
I'm not having the last waltz with him.
Wall, wherever you may be.
Now, obviously, I regret the distress I have caused to my family and friends and to my club and country.
OK, Andy will answer questions, but we're on a strict time schedule here.
Andy!
George Bragg, BBC, can I just get this straight? Are you saying News of the World journalists posing as officials from Buckingham Palace offered you an OBE if you procure some illegal drugs for a member of the royal family?
That is correct.
And a reporter posing as Sir Michael de la Tour, Royal Equerry, said, if I've got this right, the thing is, the old dear loves a quick snort. It helps our rheumatism.
Yeah, that is correct.
And you believed him?
Well, this is it.
John Story, Daily Mirror. Andy, do you think judgment is an important quality in an England captain?
All right, sorry, time's up.
Have the police spoken to you, Andy? Have the police spoken to you, Andy?
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
Do you know, I've been at this game, man and boy, since before Alex Ferguson got sacked by St. Mirren. And I've never heard anything like that in all my puff.
So to speak.
Yeah, proud of yourself at the News of the World, are you?
Oh, of course, the BBC is above such things, I don't think. George, have you met Cherry?
Ah, the honey trap, no less.
The lady in waiting, if you please. Mind you, I didn't have to wait long.
Time for a quick one, George.
Well, it'd better be a quick one. My editor keeps suggesting I do him a story. Right, come on then. There's a place round the corner called the Bricklayer and Fish Kettle. It's an Irish theme pub.
Madam Speaker, this is not back to basics. This is a new morality. No. Well, I'm not expecting the Conservatives to like it. They're responsible for the moral climate which we inherited.
Is it part of the new morality that, according to the newspapers, there are members of his government who can't keep their trousers on? Perhaps that's why they have to buy new ones. New Labour, new trousers.
Ha-ha.
You know, I'm a bit worried about the Right Honourable Gentleman. I've heard that the Comedy Store may not be renewing his contract. But I am grateful to him. He raises a very important point. Any drive towards a new morality must begin with our tabloid newspapers and the shameful and damaging allegations they constantly make about those of us in public life.
You haven't heard the best of it, George. Cherry, you tell him.
Well, look, he's agreed to carry these drugs, right? So just as we're finishing, I said to him, when you're coming through customs, Andy, remember who the stuff is for, and whatever you do, don't hide it up your bum. And he said, of course not, your ladyship.
Lambs to the slaughter.
Did you ever think about what you're doing, Derek?
Exposing drug dealers, you mean?
But he's not a drug dealer, is he? He was set up. The boy's completely innocent.
He's guilty of being a complete prat.
You can't have people resigning just because they're complete prats. On that basis, there'd be nobody left at the BBC at all. How do you sleep nights?
Like a top, my son, and a very well-paid one. Sorry, my pager. Get him in, George.
Yeah, this business has changed a bit since I came into it.
You were a tabloid hack once, George. Reporter of the Year, 2 years running.
I'm very flattered somebody remembers.
George?
Mm. Well, what's the matter with you, Derek? Your expense has been disallowed.
You said your editor wanted a story. I think he's got one.
And now other news. The Prime Minister has called on the British people to seek a new morality for the new millennium. He said Britain was not a nation of crude, malicious tabloid values. The footballer Andy Stanley, who this morning resigned as England captain, is continuing to protest his innocence over allegations of drug dealing. He insisted at a news conference that in saying, "I know how to score," he'd been quoted out of context. We're getting reports of a serious incident in the Mayfair area of London. We're going live to our crime correspondent, George Cragg.
A short time ago, the editor of the News of the World, Bill Beecham, was found dead in central London. He'd been stabbed to death in what police are describing as a frenzied attack. They're refusing to confirm at this stage that the murder is the work of the so-called journalist killer.
Ah, they're going down like flies.
Charles?
Bureaucrats, managers, the chairman is delighted. He says we're freeing resources for dynamic programme makers.
Oh, I think we can reward ourselves for a job well done. I think I'd like my reward to be a couple of weeks in Portugal.
Martin.
4 weeks in south of France?
Listen. In the immortal words of the most distinguished American philosopher of the 20th century...
Corvidal.
Jimmy Connors. In this business, if you don't win, you lose.
You're perfectly American.
There are no drawn matches in tennis.
Charles, that's enough Jimmy Connors.
Just as you wish.
What are you burbling about?
My point, Martin, is simply this. Do you wish to end up in the private sector?
Good God, of course I don't.
Precisely. Then the time has come for the ultimate wheeze.
Oh, no.
The Olympic gold wheeze. The European treble wheeze.
Well, couldn't we have a couple of quiet weeks to think about it?
Son, when you're out there on centre court, if you've got time to think about it, you're not doing it right.
The cause of death, gentlemen. Well, you can see for yourselves.
He'd had a right seeing to.
He'd suffered multiple stab wounds.
You know, this is different from the other ones, isn't it?
Not to me, it isn't. It's the murder of a prominent journalist by a loony. You're not suggesting it's a different loony.
Oh, no, no, I'm sure it's not. But look at the other killings. Poisoning, shooting, but all of them planned, controlled. This seems completely uncontrolled. It seems almost as if the murderer lost his grip and went completely berserk.
Well, that would be my analysis, certainly. There were a total of 25 stab wounds. Frankly, it's difficult to say which one was fatal.
Like as if the other killings were business. This one was personal.
Or the other ones were planned and this one wasn't. As if the killer just happened to come across the editor of the News of the World and went into a total rage.
You said yourself, Frank, how many people have reason to hate Bill Beecham.
Yeah, that's true.
That's our problem, looking for a serial killer of journalists. Everybody hates journalists, Frank. Everybody.
Oh, I think I'm going to cry.
Of course I'm pleased that you're feeling happier with life. Believe me, I'm pleased.
It's just that 2.5 years into this government, I found some purpose, some sense of what I'm for.
Yes, you don't think that morality is the Church's business at all, do you?
The Church of England has failed abjectly and miserably to give the lead our people are craving.
Yes. Well, it would play well with the Daily Mail, I grant you that.
Marcia, the tabloids are part of the problem.
They were very kind to us at the last election, Kenny. It would be nice if they could be the same next time.
Life is not just about winning elections. In any case, if I were to do something about the newspapers, it would be popular, wouldn't it?
It is true that focus groups demonstrate broad support for legislation to curb the tabloids, yes.
A privacy bill. That's what we need. A bill to stop all this nonsense. A society where your innermost secrets, even your body, can wind up on the front of the papers is not a New Labour society.
But the practicalities of a privacy bill...
Marcia, this is not a suggestion. It is a decision. Oh. I am prepared to put the full weight of 10 Downing Street behind a privacy bill. See to it.
The headlines again. The Prime Minister has launched a strong attack on the Church of England for what he called its abject failure to provide moral leadership. He called for the last Christmas of the millennium to be a time of spiritual renewal for the nation. The PM condemned what he called small-minded individuals obsessed with ultimately trivial questions such as the single European currency. The Chancellor of the Exchequer has been making a statement about the single European currency, which he said was the most important question facing the nation. Scotland Yard have admitted there are no further forwards in the hunt for the journalist killer. BBC Radio 4 News.
Thanks, everybody. Well, what that political stuff?
OK.
Richard?
What is it, Maria?
George is on with a piece from Scotland Yard.
OK, bung it up, let's listen.
This is George Cragg for the World Exclusive. Here at Scotland Yard... absolutely nothing has happened at all.
Why is everybody so frivolous this morning?
I'm speaking to you from the office of Superintendent Fearless Frank of the Yard, the man who is leading the hunt for the journalist killer and leading it nowhere. It is not too much to say that this case has caused his knotted and combined locks to part and each particular hair to stand on end. George Cragg, BBC News.
George, I've only got a national newsroom to run. Do feel free to waste my time, won't you?
I'm sorry, but I'm bored. There are journalists being bumped off left, right and centre. And are we any nearer catching the bloke? No, we are not.
George, there are other crime stories, less glamorous, but still worthy of our attention.
Yeah, well, Maria can do all that.
Yes, yes, I can do all that. George, there's been a package for you. I didn't mean to look inside, but obviously security have opened it.
Yeah, well, what is it? Present from an adoring fan.
It's a dozen black roses. George, are you still there?
Maria, get in a taxi and bring them round to Scotland Yard. Now, right now.
Come on in, Charles, most invigorated.
In due course, Martin.
I must say, this really is most impressive.
The swimming pool? Yes, well, it likes to be comfortable. I must show you around, Charles. You know, I think this is one of the few private houses in London with its own ballroom.
It's the most splendid house.
Well, I sometimes sit here and think, you know, I might have made something of myself. If only I hadn't inherited 70 million.
Oh, come now, Geoffrey, you've spent a lifetime in public service, 12 years of leading the Liberals.
But where did I lead them? When I resigned, one of the papers said, under Crichton Potter's ineffectual leadership, the Liberals have been a voice mincing in the wilderness. You see, that's why I care about the BBC, Charles. Being chairman is a chance to put something back. I want people to say of me, he put the public service in public service broadcasting.
And the drive to reduce bureaucracy is an integral part of that strategy.
No, it's absolutely crucial. You know, I just have the feeling that for a while now, the BBC has been floundering. We seem to have lost our corporate direction. We seem rather to be flapping about.
Help!
I say, is your colleague all right?
No, he's having the time of his life, Geoffrey. Look, he's waving at us. Geoffrey, what would you say are the ghastliest words in the English language?
England cricket selectors.
Well, yes, yes, but I was thinking managementization. Hideous word to describe a hideous thing. And that brings me to the next stage of Operation Slash.
Oh, my dear Charles, of course.
Thank you. The time has come, Geoffrey, to make a splash. The politics of the grand gesture.
Are you quite sure he isn't trying to attract our attention?
Number one, Madam Speaker.
This morning I had meetings with ministerial colleagues. In addition to my duties in this House, I shall be having further meetings later today.
Graham Spender.
Madam Speaker, what steps does he propose to take to control our plainly out-of-control tabloid newspapers?
Well, I am certainly aware that there is concern on this matter, and I always listen to the honourable gentleman with all the respect he deserves.
The Leader of the Opposition.
Madam Speaker, as usual, he is long on words and short on actions. What is he actually going to do?
Kenny, read this.
I will answer with pleasure. I can announce today that the government will introduce a privacy bill to curb the worst excesses of the tabloid press, and that we will do so as a matter of urgency. Yeah. I hope we will have the full support of the opposition.
Yeah. Well done, Marcia.
George, there's no reason why it should have anything to do with the case.
There is every reason.
It could be some sort of practical joke.
Oh, for pity's sake. Get up. What bloody time.
I came as fast as I could, George.
Give it here. 10 to 1, there's a greetings card in here somewhere, Frank. Ah, listen to this. Before the Roman came to Rye, or out to Severn strode, the rolling English drunkard made the rolling English road.
George, this poem and the black roses.
Yes, even you can work out what that means, can't you? Well, there you are, young lady. There's going to be a vacancy for crime correspondent sooner than you think.
That was a bit uncalled for, George, actually.
All right. Well, cheer up. Just means we'll have to get our finger out and catch the swine.
I reckon it is somebody who knows you.
How do you figure that?
Well, the rolling English drunkard.
There's no need to cheer up that much, Frank.
Well, of course I'm not all right. If you'd been given the kiss of life by Geoffrey Crichton Potter, would you be all right?
Well, in a very real sense, Martin, we've both been kissed by the chairman. He has bought the wheeze. At 11 o'clock this morning, the chairman will announce that he is abolishing, at a stroke, 5 layers of management.
5?
Exactly. That is precisely the open-mouthed, disbelieving reaction we are seeking. The grand gesture.
But 5 layers all at once?
And people will totter along corridors in television centres saying, "He can't do that." But he'll have done it.
Charles, are you sure you've thought this through?
Of course I have. Let me give you an example, Martin. You remember when old Lawson was Chancellor of the Exchequer, and he stood up and said, "I am abolishing all rates of income tax above 40%, and the entire House of Commons was dumbstruck by the sheer bravado?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Charles, but didn't that lead to a rampant credit boom and an appalling recession?
There were one or two unintended consequences, certainly, but they did not detract from the gesture.
Unintended consequences, yes. Oh, dear.
Well, I haven't found out anything you couldn't have just told me. You were a trainee reporter on the Western Morning News. Mm. You did very well, moved to the Yorkshire Post.
Oh, yeah.
Well, then you went to the Coventry Evening Telegraph, and you... Oh, now, there you didn't do so well. You got fired. For changing a headline to "Up Yours, Coventry," after the editor had gone home.
Have you ever been to Coventry, Frank? You know what's just occurred to me?
Hmm?
You haven't found out anything I couldn't have told you.
If you'd give me some idea what I'm meant to be looking for.
We're looking for a reason. Somebody might want to kill me.
Well, you're a journalist, and somebody's been bumping them off for the last couple of months.
No, no. There's more to it than that. All right, go on.
You went to the Daily Express.
In the days when it was a good paper.
And you became their crime reporter, and you started to win awards. Oh, and you were particularly commended for one story.
The murder of a little girl. It was a horrible case.
Yeah. Well, then the BBC decided to appoint their first crime correspondent. George, what has any of this got to do with the murders?
Well, you're the detective, Frank. You tell me.
At the Treasury, we have to concern ourselves with the affairs of Mammon rather than with higher morality.
Are you thinking of the Prime Minister's attempts to restrict the excesses of the press?
The Privacy Bill is a government policy, and therefore I fully support it. Although we do have to remember that we live in a free society, and our press is a vital part of that.
But the bill is extremely popular.
Oh, certainly, but, you know, short-term popularity isn't everything.
Although that is no criticism of my friend and colleague, the Prime Minister.
The Chancellor doesn't like it. Excellent.
The bill seems to have gone down well with the public.
Because they're yearning for a lead, Marcia. They don't want us blathering about public sector borrowing requirements. They want vision, inspiration, moral backbone.
Come in. Prime Minister, your telephone's off the hook. It's just that Mr. Murdoch's on the phone.
Mr. Murdoch?
Yes, he wants to talk to you about this privacy bill.
Ah.
Moral backbone, Kenny.
I'll take this call in the other room.
How did Mr. Murdoch sound, Julian?
I believe the word is incandescent, madam.
A moral crusade is always a mistake for a politician, isn't it? I did try to tell him. That was quick. Is everything all right?
Yes.
So, what did you say about the privacy bill?
I told him it was your idea.
What?
Marcia, stop this privacy bill.
I don't think we can stop it now.
Marcia, kill this bill. I don't care how, just do it.
It's not much, George.
No, you never know. What have you got?
The Daily Express, 1966. Edward Martindale, 19-year-old trainee chef from Balham, South London, was today languishing in prison following an unsuccessful attempt to steal a handbag from pensioner Mrs. Betty Willis. And it's all thanks to our crime reporter, George Cragg.
Good God, yeah. That little swine grabbed hold of a handbag in broad daylight and I nicked him. I got a front-page lead and a police commendation. God, yeah. So what?
George, people aren't christened Coco St. Martin. Nobody's christened Coco. 19-year-old Edward Martindale from Balham is none other than... That's his real name. I looked it up in Who's Who. It's got to be the same one, hasn't it?
So I nabbed him when he was a kid. He got 3 months, if I remember. But that's over 30 years ago. It's not much of a motive for murder, is it?
Well, I was only trying to help. Look for something in my past, you said. So I thought, well, if the suspects are a chef and a politician, I'll look for something in George's past to do with a chef or a politician. Sorry if I've wasted your time.
Oh, you haven't. You've done very well, Maria, very well. You know, you've got a very good brain, haven't you?
Oh, it's a real privilege to be patronised by you, George Cragg.
I said bloody salsa! If I wanted tomato ketchup, I can go buy some, couldn't I?
Sorry.
Well, all right, for what it's worth, yes. That's when I started hating journalists. I needed the money. Do you know what it's like trying to live on the money they pay a trainee chef?
I know what they pay a trainee reporter. It didn't make me go and mug people.
I had a genius to give the world. I knew what I was destined for. And pygmies, snivelling pygmies, were making my life hell. The rent, the bills, I knew what I'd come here for, you see. And I'm supposed to let them get in the way. And I saw this dreary little slut with her purse. I got 3 months, thanks to you.
And she was probably afraid to go outside the door for the rest of her life. Still, here you are. The whole world knows about your genius now.
You think I'm that killer, don't you?
Well, let me put it this way, mate. I've been reporting murder cases 30 years. I've never met anybody who seemed to beg for the word psychopath the way you do.
You prove it, mate, all right? Prove it.
For God's sake, lad, I said souffle, out the...
My God, it would be a pleasure to nick you, mate.
BBC Radio 4, the news at 7 o'clock. The government has shelved plans for a privacy bill to curb the press. This follows allegations in a newspaper about the Chancellor of the Exchequer. From Westminster, Rob Nixon.
The abandonment of the bill follows claims in this morning's Sun that the Chancellor was a close personal friend of Michael Portillo during their time at Cambridge. Under the headline, Pals at Pufter House, the paper suggests the Chancellor wore a dress at rugby dinners. The Prime Minister said this made it impossible to continue with the bill.
The House will know how personally, passionately I am committed to this bill. Yet to proceed now would suggest a desire to restrict comment about members of the government itself. However, malicious, ridiculous and untrue.
Yeah!
Look, we live in a free society, and a free press is a vital part of that. Well, those are the words of my friend and colleague, the Chancellor.
You know perfectly well these stories are untrue.
Of course I do. It's just that, well, you were at Peterhouse.
Where I spent 3 years trying to resolve the economic dilemmas of socialism.
In a dress.
Look, Marcia, but you must see, Russell, I cannot proceed with the bill. It would look as if you were hiding something.
Which you certainly weren't on the front of the Sun.
You know, Russell, you have our full support, as always.
Thank you, Prime Minister.
Marcia.
The latest poll says you're brave and courageous, but let down by your colleagues.
Well, you know, that's excellent, but... Marcia...
Let's draw a veil over it, shall we?
Yes, it does mean my moral crusade is in ruins.
Kenny, before you start feeling down in the dumps, have a look at that.
Yeah. Pals at Pufter House. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Frank, you've been telling me for weeks Coco was the bloke. It's him, George. My nose says so. What's the matter? He's worth pulling in for questioning. We'll get the evidence. Just nab him.
I wish I had something harder to go on, mate. You don't want to rush.
You do when you're the next murder victim.
Anybody mind if we listen to the news?
Frank, what are we waiting for?
On Radio 4, Rupert Thresher presents a personal selection of his favourite poetry.
This is a very special poem for me. I'll always associate it with a very special friend. He'll know who he is.
Before the Roman came to Rye or out to Severn strode, the rolling English drunkard made the rolling English road.
George.
For a very special friend. This case isn't finished, mate.
Oh, no. It'll be finished when the killer's finally finished with me. Thanks, mate. Thanks a lot.
In the End was written by Mark Taverner and starred Michael Williams, Barry Foster, Jonathan Coy, Stephen Fry, John Bird, Anton Rogers, Rebecca Front and Jessica Oyelowo. And also featured Simon Greenall, Phil Cornwell, Michael Fenton Stevens, Hugh Parker, Chris Pavlow, Martin Hyder, David Holt, Gemma Saunders and Harriet Cass. The music was composed by Paul Mottram. The executive producer was Paul Schlesinger. In the End was produced by Dawn Ellis.